Happy Pride Month, Fame Reporters! On this week's episode of The Fame Report, Alexander Casala sits down with actor Drew Drogi, poolside, for a candid conversation of queer representation in Hollywood.
Still, we have gay characters on, and not even about SNL at all, but like on TV shows and stuff that we're still trying to find our authenticity and our specificity, because like so many gay characters, I mean, still, like, you know, I'm still seeing in movies that are these groundbreaking movies about women and people of color, it's like the gay boys are still kind of in this box a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just on us as queer people to write them more interesting than that. I mean, it's not even a bitterness thing for me as much as that it's like, okay, we just have to keep working towards, you know, doing better.
What happened with that Heather's television show?
Pilot was written right before the election, and we started shooting it the day after the election. So it was definitely assuming that we would have a different president and be in a different world where liberals could be made fun of a lot more. And we should be made fun of. We're idiots as well. We're human beings. So we should be absolutely lampooned.
Everybody should
be. But people were very... But the pilot had a very different bite to it than the rest of the show. The show was super dark. But it became less about making fun of identity politics, which is what a lot of things in the pilot were criticized for.
And Drew's recent and upcoming one-man shows that are captivating audiences coast to coast.
Teaching and learning from the next generation, you know? It's like we have a lot to learn from them, and we have a lot to share with them and teach them and sort of taking care of each other. I'm always really interested in the multi-generational, you know, aspect of our community where you kind of have to find your family and you find, you know... Your queer aunts and uncles, you know, and again, you find the kids that you can sort of help out. I mean, I think that's an interesting and important part of our culture.
It's queer as hell. It's gay as fuck. It's campy, fresh, hot topics. Yes, girl, you're in luck. Diva stars and queens, LGBTQ news, New York City, Broadway, pop culture. Hurry up and get the Fame Report. This just in is the Fame Report. It's perfect for you, so get the Fame Report with Alex Casala.
It's like, this is the ambient noise of, what neighborhood is this?
Like Franklin Village or Beechwood Canyon.
I love that.
You know.
The ambient noise. It's like, it's really, I'm, because when I did it in my backyard, I was like, oh, this is entering this like super soul Sunday.
Like, welcome. Hi. It does change the vibe though when you're outside and it's the whole thing.
No, it makes it a lot more like kind of personable. Like, yeah. We're poolside.
For sure.
All right, let's start. So this is I'm not sure, like the seventh or the eighth episode of my new podcast, The Fame Report.
Awesome.
Where I'm just speaking to people who I find, you know, influential, inspiring, empowering, exciting, funny. And today I'm with the Drew Drogi?
Drogi.
Drogi.
Yeah, hard G.
You're like the third.
That's good. That's good, though. I don't mind Drogi. Droge is kind of hard. I hear Droge.
Droge.
Drew Droge. It always just sounds like a horrible, just like secretary and accounts payable. Like, I'm Drew Droge. But I answer to anything. How are you, Alex?
I'm great. Good. I literally have like the worst last name.
Kakala?
Casala.
Oh, Casala. See, I got yours wrong too.
All but that's like, my life.
But I'm good. Totally. But it's like a soft. It's like a. Do you have a sedia under the sea? Like a French. What is that?
No, supposedly. Uh-huh. Supposedly, when a sea is surrounded by two vowels,
uh-huh,
it gets the sound of. And hear the ambient noises of whatever.
This is Beechwood Canyon, Franklin Village.
No, I love that.
I promise we're not underneath the airstrip at LAX, even though it might sound that way.
No, I love it. I actually kind of love it. It's like adding, like. It makes it a little like ASMR. Whatever those videos are.
I hope people are pleasured by the sound of airplanes. I hope it like relaxes some people. Like, oh, yes.
No, I think the children in the distance playing is cute, too. No, I actually love it.
Yeah, it's a good neighborhood.
So supposedly when a C is surrounded by two vowels, uh-huh, it sounds like an S.
Oh, okay.
But nobody knows that.
No, it looks like Kakala.
It does. And it's funny because I do think growing up, like in the phonics book,
uh-huh,
in like third grade, there was a box in like the little corner. It was like
something, like a little tip, like a something. And I remember in that box, it said what I just said.
Sure.
I felt so seen. But my mom hates our last name. She's always been
threatening. What is the origin? Where does it
come
from?
It was initially Kasalowitz.
Okay.
So it was very Polish.
Yeah, sure.
And then when they came over on the boat, they were like, we got to simplify, shorten that. And it went from Kasalowitz to Kasala.
Ah. So we were Droga Mueller, and we dropped the Mueller and kept Drogi. We kept the hard part of our name.
And what's the origin of that?
German.
German.
Yeah. So we're neighbors.
Why did they drop the Mueller?
I don't know.
Yeah, just too long trying to
They tried to Americanize it, and they took the most non-American part. Like, if it was Mueller.
Yeah.
You know.
Welcome to the stage, whatever. Drew Mueller.
That just doesn't... I know, Drew Mueller. Boring. Or Drew Mueller. Sounds even worse. Drew Mueller. I don't know. I like my name the way it is, so...
And then when I hear people... It's actually funny. Like, when I hear people say my name right, like, randomly, I think it excites me, but I'm also, like... just like weirded out by it
because they know it, they've heard it.
No, I'm like, it's weird to me. I'm like even hearing my name said correctly on my own podcast jingle, I was like, wow, that sounds nice.
Well, so I'll say strange. It correctly from now on. Kasala.
Did you were you at DragCon?
Mm-hmm. And you were too.
What were you doing there?
I was doing a panel. Frank DeCaro moderated a panel with Coco Peru and Leslie Jordan and James St. James and me.
Legends.
I was kind of like gobsmacked to get to be a part of that. It was crazy. Yeah. And we all talked about drag in the world of film and TV and like the history of that. And they had so much more to share because they just have these truly legendary stories. And, I just learned so much from them and how far we've all come. But we all talked about like people that we grew up watching on TV and the first time we saw drag on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of how that sort of spoke to us as kids and how we sort of always felt connected to that and then all those that have done it. And
when was the first time you saw drag on TV?
I said Terry Sweeney on SNL because he was on SNL in 1985. He was the first openly gay cast member of the show. And he
and played, the last. I don't know, I'm not sure if that's
well,
true.
Well, not really, but kind of. Oh, yeah. Yeah, whatever. But
I just spoke, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he was just this trailblazer and genius who did Nancy Reagan and Queen Elizabeth. And, just was always doing drag on there. And was just... But he made me hate Nancy Reagan before I knew why I should hate Nancy Reagan. So that's, so he definitely shaped me in that. But then, I don't know. I saw Divine at a very young age and I saw, And then I always connected it with sketch comedy. Like, it was always, like, Carol Burnett and In Living Color and all those kids in the hall, like Scott Thompson. I mean, come on. Like, all of that was, like, so working together to, like, influence me.
And Frank DeCaro just did a book.
Yes. It's fantastic. It's, like an encyclopedia. It's called Drag. I think it's, like, Combing Through the Big Wigs of Show Business is mm-hmm. the subtitle. But it's Drag by Frank DeCaro. It's amazing, and I'm very honored that I get a little shout-out in the book as well, because he goes across the... He does, everything from, TV shows and movies that where, some straight movie star did drag to legendary drag queens to everything in between, and, so it's really pretty incredible, like, what he covers in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a few months ago, I was saying, like, there needs to be, like, a really good... encyclopedia or some sort of resource about, because if you Google drag books, the only thing that really comes up is RuPaul's memoirs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's like it. Not like an informational resource reference that people can...
No, it's so good for people to realize like all the people that have come before,
mm-hmm.
And it's, obviously there are countless people that aren't in the book that who are also, legendary and mm-hmm. but it's just such a nice way of seeing like this is what was happening on stages and in clubs and in the world of entertainment and how that changed people's perception of it all leading up to Drag Race, like because I think Drag Race has obviously exploded it and made it where we have like a play place for kids at DragCon now. It's like it's such a thing now for everybody. It's in the mainstream. But you know.
And even, like, for me, I think about all of the things that I loved as a child. Like, I loved Birdcage. And that was a really big movie in my household.
Sure.
And the other one was Chuang Fu.
Oh my God, amazing.
Which is also really interesting to think about, because the way they perceive, they kind of told the story of drag was, like, these drag queens are, like, always in drag.
Yes, they're on the road trip in full face. Like, you know, and which drag queens would never do. But, you know, I mean, you think about that, and if it was in the world of a movie, especially pre-Drag Race, I think it wouldn't have been as exciting for them to see, especially you're looking at, I mean, you're talking about three straight actors, obviously, who are, I think they're all playing gay in the movie, I believe, in Tu Wong Fu. But seeing, like, Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and John Leguizamo as men on a road trip is would be, I think, confusing and not as exciting for people to, you know, and so I get why they did it. But it is weird for us knowing how drag queens travel and how they are with each other. Like, it's like they would never be, like, putting on a face for each other. It's like work. But yeah, I mean, you know. Because I think Priscilla was after that, right? Was Priscilla after that?
I think Priscilla was, like, slightly before.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if Priscilla actually,
because they were, they
so
were
similar.
Out of drag and on the bus, and Priscilla, I know.
Well, and Roman Priscilla, it's also, I think, two gay men, and then the older one is more, like, trans, kind of,
yes.
like, identifying more as a
yes.
woman, like,
right.
but the other two are in and out of it more,
right.
you know, but there is
like
also...
Like, Guy Pearce is out of drag, I mean, if
yeah.
when they're in the book, yeah, yeah, no.
But they're re-releasing Tu Wong Fu, I think.
Oh, they are,
with, like,
oh, great.
20th anniversary, and they're, like, doing, like, extra scenes, additional scenes.
Oh, good.
And that's also, I think, how I learned about RuPaul was through that, because
okay.
she's in there as the pageant.
Racial tension.
Racial tension?
Her name is Rachel Tension.
Oh my God, I love that.
Can you imagine if I just started randomly screaming Rachel Tension?
I'm
like,
oh, right,
Tourette's,
wow.
Tourette's. She's just screaming.
This podcast is getting really... So, but the other thing I was going to say about your panel at DragCon is, I will say, backstage, I was, like, a little starstruck when I saw Leslie Jordan.
Same.
No, same.
He's amazing.
He is amazing, and Beverly Leslie
so
is
sweet.
Such, like, an important part of that whole Will and Grace, like, story
mm-hmm.
and brand that
mm-hmm.
I just was like, oh, my God. And I wanted just to, like, be Megan Mullally in that moment and be like, Beverly Leslie. But then I was like, he probably gets it all the time.
He probably does. He was so sweet. He was so just open to talk about. He's been around for a long time and has just gone, you know, he has walked that walk. And so it's, like, so great for him to be so celebrated,
mm-hmm.
you know. At this, you know, point, because it's like, my God, he's earned it. He was on, and I didn't even talk to him about this, but he was on a Blockbuster video commercial that used to be on the in front of a lot of VHS tapes that we had, and he worked, and it was a long commercial, and he worked at Blockbuster, but it was like a 10-minute commercial, and he was, like, helping people find their, and I just loved him from that. It was one of those things you immediately, just, like, he comes on screen, you're like, I love him, I'm gonna know everything about him, you know. And he's just as delightful.
And also Coco Peru, who was on the panel, is also in Will and Grace.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she talked about that on the show.
Have you ever been on Will and Grace?
No, I never have. Yeah, it's like, I...
Because it's a very New York... Isn't it a very New York kind of based thing?
Will and Grace? No, it's here.
Oh,
it's here, yeah. No, but it's a groundbreaking show, and I love that it's back, and it's like, you know, it's... yeah, people... love it. It's really has changed so many minds. I mean, my grandparents watch Will and Grace. You know, I went over to in South Carolina, my grandparents' house, they had Will and Grace on, and they loved it. So it's like, it's one of those things that, you know, these things aren't, you know, I think we get in a bubble because we are just around gay stuff all the time.
So much.
That,
yeah.
you know, and there are these things that break through, and you're like, oh my God, this is actually something that people connect with and respond to and fall in love with.
Did you see it was like one of the first episodes of the season when Jack puts the numbing cream on his face.
Oh my God, genius.
That, I think, was like one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my whole entire life.
Oh, I know.
I watched the episode three more times.
He's incredible. He's one of the greatest physical comedians ever. I mean, he really is like, it was Buster Keaton level brilliance. I mean, I'm just marveling at it. It's just like unbelievable.
I literally was like, texting friends, telling friends, like, you have to watch this episode
so
of Will and Grace. It is for this one moment that is like, I think I cried laughing.
Yeah, it's so good.
Do you consider yourself a drag queen?
No. I don't. I mean, out of respect to drag queens, I don't. I mean, I definitely, I've said I've called myself an accidental drag queen because I was doing sketch comedy and started playing female roles. And then obviously, like, my Chloe 70 thing, which we don't have to talk about because I've talked about it so much. But that sort of took off, and that became its own thing. And I started getting asked to do drag shows through that. And so I do, and then a lot of, like, sketch and gay comedy shows. We, you know, we do the Golden Girls in the basement of Casita del Campo, and we do...
Who are you in Golden Girls?
I'm Rose. Betty White.
Typecasting.
And, very... I know, actually, I never get to play sweet people. It's so nice to be, like, to be sweet.
You play bitchy a lot.
I play bitchy a lot. I play dumb occasionally. So dumb is, like, I can do that. But, like, the sweetness is, like, is fun. Because she really is such a child. I mean, she's a baby. She's always learning.
But
she's always
teaching.
She also
has some really good zingers. And I think because they come from such a naive place.
Yeah, she doesn't always, she doesn't always get the joke, which is also really fun to play and play around with. But yeah. So, I mean, I'm never offended if people call me a drag queen, but I would never consider myself that. I don't really know how to paint my face really well. I don't really do, I mean, you know, like, it's more comedy. It's more based in comedy than it is in the world of drag, I would say. You know, a booger queen, as we would call us. You know?
A booger queen?
Yeah.
Even when I did drag, I was horrible at makeup, and I still considered myself a drag queen. But
well, sure.
My drag persona...
want to call yourself.
Yeah. My drag persona was, like, very ratchet, very wrecked.
Sure.
She came from the gutters.
Sure.
She lived there.
Sure. I have one of those, too. I do one of those, too. Because that's, like, my Tanya Roberts thing that is, like, she's so much fun because it's that, you know. So it's fun to play around with it. And it's also just, I just love doing a lot of different things. I like being busy and doing, and so creatively I always really like going from, like, oh, I'm going to be some crazy, you know, clown tonight to, like, play more real grounded people that, you know, it's fun to mix it up like that.
Well, for me too, like, the reason what I loved about Tammy so much, Tammy Famous, my drag persona alter ego, was, like, there's so many queens out there that are trying to look good. I mean, that's what so much of drag is. And for me, like, that wasn't part of my gig.
Right.
It was like X, Y, and Z. And so to enter from this place where it's like, I'm hairy chested, I have hair under my armpit, my makeup is horrible.
Yeah.
It, like, I think it really also would excite people because then they would be like, oh, wow, this is actually something that we haven't per se seen before.
Yeah.
Being bad at something intentionally is, like, almost more exciting than trying to be good at it and then failing.
Sure, absolutely.
Especially,
I mean, it's always about the character anyway and the point of view. It's always more about that, so.
And then, wait, what else is going on? What was I going to say? So DragCon, and, like, what else did you think about DragCon? Like, where did you walk away from that experience? Was this your first one?
No, I've gone every year, and it's amazing. It's always, like, to me, it's a little bit like Halloween, where I love that it exists, and I love to go and watch other people love it so much, because it's very much for people who love that world, and for people to dress up for the first time or once a year or whatever, they're able to do that and feel free and just let their freak flag fly and do all that. I really enjoy it. It's also a little bit like, it's like what we do for a living. So it's not always as, you know, it's not always, I don't want to say it's not exciting, but it's work, you know, it's like anything else. It's like, for me, like, going to a Halloween party is not as exciting as somebody else because I put on costumes for a living. So if I have to walk around a party with a costume on, I'm always like, where's the audience? Where's the paycheck? Otherwise, I'd rather be in a t-shirt and jeans. Like, I don't want to be, you know.
Yeah.
And so, because it's just like, whatever you do for a living, it's like, you know, you don't want to, you know, do that on your downtime. So I'm always, like, happy when I can, like, go and see other people's just insane delight to, like, meet some of the queens or just see all this stuff. But they've also expanded it so much. Like, this year there was, like, a booth to, like, get people to register to vote. You know, there was all kinds of...
The kids,
you know,
zone. I mean,
the kids zone. There was,
like, a
whole
thing where...
It really
is amazing,
where,
the kids. Like, seeing some of these kids come in these looks. And, like, they're there and they're 12 years old and they're with, like, their mom.
Yeah.
And I, like...
Yeah.
I mean, that to me, like, to be that mom, I, like, love her so much.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's... And the fact that... I mean, and I've talked to other queens, that it's a really great opportunity because DragCon is all ages.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of their events are in bars and are in places where kids can't go.
True, yeah.
To meet them or to, like, experience this art, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that is what is so special about DragCon, is the fact that it is all ages, it is family friendly, and then you see them there and you're just like, girl, like, some of these kids are, like, with the wigs and the makeup and the dresses, and it's like... They're still living so much in their truth so young, and their parents are supporting them so much where they're coming with them. It's like, it's so fucking amazing.
Totally.
So tell me, when did you move to Los Angeles?
20 years ago. Labor Day will be 20 years.
From where?
From North Carolina.
Yeah. And how old were you?
I was 22. I was just out of college.
Wow.
So I've been out here. I mean, I've never officially moved. Like, I mean, I've spent, you know, obviously time other places, but I've never lived anywhere but here since school. So.
In Los Angeles. Yeah. Where else did you live?
Well, I mean, I grew up in the Carolinas and a bunch, and then here. I mean, like, I've spent a lot of time in New York, but never really lived there. I mean, the longest I've been there was like 3 months at a time.
For that show, for your show,
when I was doing my solo show there, and then and I go there a bunch, and I, you know, and I love traveling, and I love going all over the world, but this is home. I love it here.
And you moved here to act.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like? What was it like? Like, do you remember like where you start or you're getting your gigs?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, it's I can't imagine trying to do it again. And I think about it like, oh my god, what was I thinking? Because it was a long process of just like. Nothing. I mean, I was like taking classes. I started at the Groundlings right away. I knew I wanted to take classes there, so I fell in love with a group of people at the Groundlings and just like.
What is the Groundlings? Awesome. I don't even know what that is.
It's a sketch comedy theater where a lot of Saturday Night Live people started, and you know, I mean, it's like Melissa McCarthy and Lisa Kudrow and Jennifer Coolidge and you know Kristen Wiig and everybody like kind of got their start doing. Sketch comedy and improv, and that's where I started taking classes, and then that was like years of like being in class and like waiting tables and just like doing any show that I could possibly do, and at the Groundlings I learned how to write, and I learned how to write my own material and create my own stuff, and then that's when I just started making videos many years after that, and then and when the videos, like, that sort of blew up things for me, and I was, like, able to get in more doors. But
Chloe, you know, almost seems like it was pre... Like, that happens a lot now, but that was, like, the beginning.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, creating a character online, like, for yourself.
Because I started doing that character. I started doing Chloe in 2002. So we're talking about 17 years I've been doing Chloe. And the videos,
was
I want to say...
Around.
Yeah, no, that was on stage. And then the videos were probably... Like 2009, I want to say. 2008, 2009, maybe.
Oh, so you have been doing it for years before you started like digitalizing. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was doing it on stage before that. And then Jim Hansen was, my friend Jim was the one who was like, these need to be videos. And he was the visionary behind making the videos happen. And
they lived on YouTube.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that sort of, you know, started to let things... You know, that made things a lot easier for me to get indoors and all of that. And still, you know, I mean, I still get most of my jobs from people that I know, from friends or from people who know me or know of me. And, you know, so it's something that, like, now is, like, so much easier. But it was a long ride. I mean, my 20s and a lot of my 30s were just, like, banging my head against the pavement. But it was also great. I mean, I was... really creative people. I was never without something to do creatively. I mean, that was another thing that I always was inspired by people around me to keep working and creating and stuff. And, you know, you just learn how to be poor and creative for a while, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, for an infinite amount of time. So,
have you ever auditioned for Saturday Night Live?
I did. Many years ago. I'm trying to think of the year, whatever. It was a long time ago. It was terrifying, and they were very nice. They saw me at the Groundlings and did the whole thing. They flew me up there, and you know, you audition on the set of, you know, on the stage, and it's harrowing and crazy. And I don't think I would have been ready to do it when I would have gotten it. I don't think it would have been, you know, I have to at least. Think that way. I mean, I can't be like, oh, if only I had done SNL. It would have totally done very different things for my career.
Trajectory. And,
yeah, I mean, it would have made me like famous a lot faster. But I don't know what
if you would have been ready for it.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know if they would want me. They would let me do Chloe on SNL. You know what I mean? I don't know that would, because I was definitely doing it then. But I don't. I feel like You know, and also because they haven't had a lot of openly queer performers on the show, you know, I've always said I need to be like the third queer person on the show, not like the first or like the only one, because I'm weird on top of it, and I'm a nerd on top of it. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's like,
well, there seems to
represent
to be...
the you know, mm-hmm. I don't know that would have been exactly what would have, you know, represent them. But it's
hard
really
to be the
good.
First.
Yeah, I don't even know about, and it's also just like I think it would be wrong for me to be, you know, it's like I would happily do it, but I don't know that it would be my go to because still we have gay characters on, and not even about SNL at all, but like on TV shows and stuff that we're still trying to find our authenticity and our specificity, because like so many gay characters, I mean, still, like, you know, I'm still seeing in movies that are these groundbreaking movies about women and people of color, it's like the gay boys are still kind of in this box a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just on us as queer people to write them more interesting than that. I mean, it's not even a bitterness thing for me as much as that it's like, okay, we just have to keep working towards, you know, doing better.
I mean, it's really hard for, you know, I think it's still really hard for people to understand and to accept men being feminine or being mm-hmm. flamboyant. And I find it very interesting because I find that there to be so much kind of like almost internalized homophobia within our own community where,
oh, for sure,
we don't support our like gay brothers.
No, we don't. It's
as
a
much
big
as we'll support
problem.
Drag queens.
Absolutely. We support.
Like, look at Mateo Lane. Like, we will, I feel like, sure, a lot of gay men will eye roll Mateo, mm-hmm. but then if another drag queen made the same exact joke that he made, they'll hoot and holler.
Well, if Mateo put a wig on, you know, then it would be a different situation.
Right, but it's,
you know,
just so
and
funny
that's something that we all, you know, you know, what's great about us is that we celebrate our women and we celebrate our drag queens. But so many gay men have an issue with other gay men in terms of they don't want them, they don't respond to them in a way that it's really interesting. And I've always said, you know, you could have somebody who had three lines on Riverdale or fill in the blank of a TV show. That's my go-to because it's like a hot young people show. But I mean, fill in the blank show, walk into a gay bar and everybody there's like, oh my God, that's so-and-so. He's so hot. Is he gay? Is he straight? I don't know. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. He's so hot. Look at him. Look, what is he doing? What is he doing? And then if Adam Lambert walked in, everybody in that room
that
would go,
that queen.
Exactly. Ugh. That bitch. I know that bitch. And it's right. Like, excuse you. But Adam Lambert is a star, a motherfucking genius who deserves the respect and to be bowed to. I mean, I just think the world of him and his talent. And it's like, we kind of go, ugh, but I don't know what that's about. We're having that right now with Pete Buttigieg, where it's like only gay men are the ones saying, well, America's not ready for a gay president. It's like...
Or he's not the right kind of gay.
There's also that stupid argument, and it is stupid. It's absolutely stupid. The fact that we have all fought so hard for our own representation and to, like you said, to be seen, that is who he is, so let him be that.
Yeah.
How about that? How about born this way? That's how he's born, so shut up. But yes, I know. But it's also that, and it's also the fact that
the other one that gets it a lot is JVN. I feel like JVN, especially now that he's become so successful, he gets like a lot of eye rolls, and I try not to do that. There are some things about him that annoy me at times, but I really try to like also understand. Like, look at him.
Well, he's wonderful, and he's a friend of mine, and I adore him, and I'm so thrilled for his success. And I'm also like, you know, but I'm saying like we are the ones that are saying America's not ready for a gay fill in the blank. It's gay people that are saying that. It's not straight people with half a brain. I don't care about these Tea Party Trump supporters. That's actually not most Republicans even. I'm sorry, it's just not. And talk to anyone who is not in our bubble, and I think we all can learn a lot from that. But it's like that people don't care. I mean, that's its own problem. And you can say, you know, we need more visibility. We need people to care more about that. But when most people are going to vote or how they're thinking, they really don't care about, you know, about someone's sexuality, you know? And it's our own internalized homophobia that's saying, oh, well, they would never... It's the same thing of, like, you won't like me because I'm gay. I may not like you because of other things, but I don't think people aren't, you know? And, you know, but and in the name of equality, we don't have to like someone just because they're gay by any means. But it's like, we have so much in us that we're saying, we're so afraid that the thing that, you know, from seventh grade that we've been holding on to, that we're so afraid of being judged for, is something that anybody else is even thinking about, you know? And most people, when they're looking at, like, again, it's the same thing about, like, well, we have so much misogyny in the country, and, like, people saying we weren't ready for a woman as a president. I'm like, sadly, I understand that more than I understand with the gay man, because I think we do have major issues with women in power. But also, like, there were other reasons why people didn't vote for Hillary, and it was not because she's a woman. So, like, it's to simplify these things is lazy, I think. And I think it's on us, in the name of being, you know, the open-minded, diverse people, is to, like, let ourselves in to the equation. Allow ourselves into the picture, as opposed to saying, well, you're not going to like us because, or, you know, I'm a big queen, so you're not going to understand me, and you're going to judge me. That's what you're doing to yourself, boo. That's what we're all doing to ourselves. And it's why we have to, you know, and I think it's so much of my work. I love playing horrible people. I love playing horrible gay people, because I love, in my mind, it's what comedy's function is to say, don't be this person. Don't do this. Don't, you know, but I think, you know, being fabulous and adorable is kind of boring. And
so what do you think is preventing studios from writing better gay characters, having more things be about? Like,
I think it's a very complicated topic, but I do think a lot of it is gay men in power at these studios
who are
saying exactly what we're saying, who are saying, well, they'll never accept a gay lead. It's like, we have so many out. I mean, look at the cast of The Boys in the Band on Broadway. Okay, that's just 9 people, and, you know, and that was a cast of out gay movie stars, TV stars, theater stars that were in that show, and that was one play. There was also Torch Song and Angels in America with, you know, gay stars in it. So it's like, that was just last year in New York, like, in one place. So we have them. It's not like, oh, we don't have the talent, or they don't have an audience. They do. It's the gatekeepers that think that we're not going to be able to do that. Also, I think they really separate a lot between, like, drag queens and, you know, because now that's the hot thing now. It's like, drag queens are hot, you know, and they're, you know, you know, and they're just thinking about what's, you know, again, it's money. It's what makes money. And, you know, I mean, what they're going to have to do is do, like, a gay superhero movie or some big budget movie with gay people. And then just be like, see, if it's this human story about connecting, which is my favorite kind of stuff, that never makes money. That just doesn't make money now. Gay, straight, whatever. But put gays in space. Done.
Well, that's what Meryl Streep, I was
who?
At. She's new. It was for Florence Foster Jenkins, and I was at the press junket for it, and somebody asked her about something. I asked her something, and she brought up, she's like, you know, we're really having this, like, superhero moment, and she was frustrated with it. She says, you know, what I want to see being created more are, you know, what you just said.
Of course.
These stories of human, and she...
Right.
And then she said that. This is what she said that was so iconic. She said, I don't know why we're having this superhero moment. Maybe it's because we need one now more than ever.
Yeah, that's true.
And that was the room got shit.
Yeah.
Mother Meryl,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, for
really
sure.
Speak. And then I was like, and okay.
For sure. Well, we need escapism, too. We need to just not think about our lives. We need to not see our lives. I don't know. I'm weird in that I love to go to the movies to cry and to think and to get really introspective, and I love that. But I totally understand most people's need to totally put all that horrible seriousness from their lives away and go and just and watch something that's big and loud and pretty, you know?
Well, there is going to be that movie with Andrew Rannells, which is supposed to be, like, the first him, Judd Apatow, not Andrew Rannells, Billy Eichner. Billy Eichner,
yes.
And Judd Apatow, and it's going to be, like, the first major studio film, like, similar to kind of how Trainwreck was, like, with, like,
yes,
a gay man.
Which is, I cannot wait.
I cannot wait. I mean, I read the little, like, one-liner for it, and I'm like,
but it's
that
also,
sounds
it's
like
on
me.
Us. It's on all of us to support that movie and support that and not sit around with our vodka sodas and roll our eyes and be like, oh. You know, because I think also... we have this thing inherently in us that we feel like there can only be one, and it's a competition. And if somebody has this thing, mm-hmm. I can never have this thing. And so we're so used to being like the one gay guy in a room full of straights, and we walk in and snap our fingers and everybody finds us fabulous. And then the other gay guy walks in and it's like, who's that bitch? And it's competition. As opposed to, great, we have something to connect over and talk about. It's the thing that women do to each other when, you know, they will immediately size up the other woman in the room before they even start to criticize the man. And it's a thing that we, you know, so when we see someone doing like something groundbreaking, you know, like a rom-com starring an out gay comedian, I think a lot of us think, oh, well, that should have been me. On some
I'm not
even
gonna get
subconscious
my
level.
There goes my
and
movie.
And it's like, no, that means that's adding an opportunity. That's actually making the opportunity for other things
right.
to happen. And for people to, you know, it's like support each other versus tear each other down.
For sure. I do it. I mean, there's times because I'm still on the up. I'm still climbing.
We all, yeah.
And
we
I see,
all
Jake, I see it, but I'll see, and I've been better about understanding when I'm doing it and stopping myself. And then I'll see JVN and be like, oh, really flamboyant, feminine, gender kind of, and it's so stupid. This is great because I was just thinking about it. The supporting actress in Insecure, her name's like, I'm gonna totally fuck her name up, but she plays the. I mean, I'm not sure if her character in the thing. I don't watch Insecure, but she in real life.
I've watched a couple of them, but I'm not
she
sure.
She in real life is Christian and a virgin,
uh-huh.
this actress.
Uh-huh.
And about a year ago on a panel, somebody asked her about, or she just brought this up, that she gets asked a lot about witnessing Cardi B's success. And does she think that Cardi B is a good representation of the black female, black woman?
Okay.
Because she's so different.
Right.
And she said, I applaud Cardi B's mm-hmm. success because Cardi B is being herself and she's obviously connecting to somebody in our community who is just like her or sees himself in her.
Absolutely.
And that isn't me though.
Yeah.
And I'm Christian, I'm a virgin, I'm doing me and obviously I'm connecting to somebody in our mm-hmm. community because mm-hmm. I'm becoming successful and people are connecting to me.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, for anybody that sees something that's not what they perceive as being a black female or whatever and criticizes it, you're wasting time criticizing it when you should be working on yourself.
Absolutely.
And getting
it's a lot easier. It's so much easier to be a victim and say, well, this is why things didn't work out for me because there could only be one, blah, blah, blah. We just have read so many Hollywood narratives that are not even really true or completely true about how one star rises and the other falls, and we sort of have that in us to just be like that this person can't coexist and we can't
right
and also like who's a good representation of a community. It's like let other people hash that out. It's like you represent, you know, yourself and your truth and what you're about, like, you know, because.
But it's also kind of like, but we do talk a lot about identity, and I think at times like we almost talk about identity so much where we do kind of like succeed and fall by it.
Yeah.
I mean, and I am a person that's made a career out of like LGBTQ media, and I'm even saying that myself because at times like we can put too much on it. Where mm-hmm. we also do need to be thinking about like, where am I, like what connects me and disconnects me from my identity, because mm-hmm. not everything is because I'm a gay man as well. I mean, most of it is obviously, and I think that could be like a weird thing to talk about, like an awkward thing, and maybe not like the right thing to talk about because like the media and the narrative is so much talked about like identity and like mm-hmm. supporting voices of the marginalized and like raising them up and everything, which is obviously important and
of
needed
course,
but
of
it's
course.
Also understanding like what connects us. There's more that connects us that disconnects.
Absolutely.
Us.
And that's on a, and that's I would say as human beings, not just as gay people. It's like the more you talk with someone, sit down and talk to them and hear where they're coming from, and it's like, you know, everybody is so different and everybody's so the same. I mean, it's like it's I know that sounds so pat, but it's like I just think it's very easy for us to establish the us and them. And it's very easy for us to, it's just like when, you know, when the old phrase, you know, hurt people, it's like, you know, we just think
I never heard that. I actually never heard that until the reunion.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So,
Drag Race.
Who said that on
Raja.
The Drag Race? Yeah. Raja said that on the Drag Race. Yeah. It's a thing and it's true. And it's a thing where, you know, we just have to be better than that. But I've never really understood the idea of like, let's be mean girls and let's be, You know, because, I mean, I was that in high school, right. And I got over, you know, and I learned, like, oh, I can be really cruel. I can really hurt people's feelings. Maybe don't. And also, like, I don't know. It's just, I've been out here doing this for so long, and I've had some success and some not success and everything in between. And, you know, I have days that I go, what am I doing with my life? And, oh, my God, what's next? And is anything next? And what's, you know, and I think that's going to always be the way it is. And, you know, all you can do is just say, okay, I got to just make something new and we'll see how it works. Just keep making things. And then you don't have time to worry about what other people are doing. You just have your eyes on your own paper. You know, you're doing your own thing and you're not. And it's like, I'm thrilled for, you know, other people's success. And if there are people that I don't like personally, and there are plenty of those people too, you know, you roll your eyes and be like, ugh, don't care for that. But moving on, it's not like you sit at home and like, you know, give all this energy and like sit around a hate shrine and hope they crumble so that you can succeed. It doesn't work like that, you know?
Well, I think, and also we all do this, like society does it, but especially as gay men, is like we're always kind of doing like we're pitting people against each other. Uh-huh. And it's like the whole, just like the divas. It's like, okay, like Cher or Madonna. Madonna or Gaga.
Right.
This or this. And I'm like, are we killing one? And I always like think about like the end of The Good Son. You know, The Good Son, that movie with like at the Macaulay end. Culkin. Well, spoiler alert. At the end of the movie, the woman has like, she's holding Macaulay Culkin in one hand, and I think it's Elijah Wood in the other.
Elijah
and
Wood,
she has to drop one to save the other. I'm like, is it the end of The Good Son? Am I holding Gaga and holding Madonna? No, like we can have both.
Absolutely.
And I definitely like, I love them all in some ways, and I think some people would think, oh, you're really like a Cher fan, or you're really a Gaga fan. And I'm like, I'm honestly a fan of all of them, and we all can be a fan of all of them.
It's noise to me.
And it's the same thing even like, but we all do it, even with like the drag queens, even the queens. Like, people are so much into like picking one, and that's who they stand first and foremost. And it's like, I don't know, that just seems like so time-consuming.
Well, because it's like elimination shows, or, you know, we think that, and it's in the world of comedy, it's like, you know, everybody, you know, they do pick their favorite and least favorite cast members of SNL every year, and they do that whole, like, who do you like more? You know, that also usually falls on the women as well, which is always really interesting to me, that people get into debates.
Oh, a lot of the worst articles
were gay men get into debates
in,
about, you know, the women on SNL, which is the best woman on SNL, and it's like the men, they kind of, we don't even acknowledge.
Right.
But, so it's like so many levels of, like, what's weird and wrong about all this? But, you know, yeah, it's just a thing where it's just like anything. It's like things that we do that stand in the way of moving forward. It's like we just kind of, we love to have these somehow relax our brain. It's like planning what you're going to do that day or something.
You brought up high school and like being mean gays or mean girls. Mm-hmm. That was what, because I don't know what ended up happening to it, but what was it? Heathers. Mm-hmm. We went to Heathers.
Yes.
That was all kind of about that. And the mean people were the queers, were the LGBTQ.
First of all, everybody was awful on the show in a pointed, delicious way. And if you actually watch the movie Heathers again, which a lot of people who criticize the TV show, I don't think remember Heathers or haven't seen Heathers, because they remember Heathers like Mean Girls or Clueless. And Heathers is brutal. It's pitch black. Everybody in that movie is awful, except for Veronica in the movie. And Martha Dumptruck. Like, they're the two, like,
Veronica
nice people.
Is Winona?
Is Winona Ryder. Everyone else is, you know, is horrifyingly bad. And so the point of Heathers is, to me, that popularity corrupts and that humans are capable of really horrible things with just a little bit of attention on them. And, you know, and even Veronica has this complicated thing of, like, you know, she wants to be individual, but she also wants to fit in because she's in high school, and she gets in with this, like, hot boyfriend who's, like, they accidentally kill someone, and then it's, like, we're on a killing spree. And, you know, so what the TV show did, first of all, we've had so many things since Heathers that have come out, which are always, you know, pretty bitch girls, rich bitches walking down the hallway, flicking people and saying as if, and that whole thing. So what the show did was imagining, also Heathers also very much made fun of liberal people in a really, really
the
delicious
movie?
Way. The movie did as well. And so so when the TV show was coming out, it was like equal opportunity offender. People are wretched, conservative, liberal, whatever. And so what the show did was it was imagining a hyper-liberal school where the plus-size kids, the LGBT kids, the kids of color, were the popular kids. And because they're human beings, they also are terrible, and they're reigning with terror. There are also good gay kids on the show, on Heather's as well. It wasn't like making a statement, obviously, that, you know, gay kids are evil. The writing staff was all gay men and women, one straight guy. And they were really smart about how they handled all of it. And it also was a reaction to school violence and what causes it. So it wasn't. Also, Heather's the film is not a straight up laugh out loud comedy. It is a dark, sad, fucked up comedy. You know, it's like, and so the TV show followed in line with that. And I was so proud to be a part of it. And it was something that it was at every table read. We were like, I can't believe we're gonna do this, and we did. And you know,
it got postponed and got re-edited.
It didn't get re-edited. It just got they didn't show the last episode, so they showed the first nine.
But it did come out.
It did come out for a week, and on Paramount Network, they basically put the whole show up in a week.
Like a miniseries.
Yeah, basically. And it was tricky because there's never a good time because there's always a school shooting. There's always some horrible act of violence going on in the world. And they were so scared. I mean, I understood in the initial stage of it because it was right after the Parkland shooting. Mm-hmm. And it was something where, you know, the national moment. We certainly didn't want to look like we were on the other side of the kids. We wanted to be like, obviously, we're on the side of these kids in Florida. But it got to where they kept announcing it and pulling it. To where they just lost confidence in it. And the show is incredibly confident. And it was a bummer that it didn't even really get to exist for people to be able to
have a conversation
to really
about
criticize it.
The have thing a too, conversation
most people
about.
That actually saw it, they only watched the pilot. And I will say the pilot was written right before the election. And we started shooting it the day after the election. So it was definitely assuming that we would have a different president and be in a different world where liberals could be made fun of a lot more. And we should be made fun of. We're idiots as well. We're human beings. So we should be absolutely lampooned.
Everybody should
but
be.
But people were very, but the pilot was had a very different bite to it than the rest of the show. The show was super dark, but it became less about making fun of identity politics, which is what a lot of things in the pilot were criticized for, was that they were making fun of identity politics, which I do think in their extreme form are extreme and should be, you know, we're just in this weird place with comedy now where people think if we're laughing at something, then we're immediately belittling it or criticizing it or not understanding it versus, like, exploring the nuance within it. Mm-hmm. And being able to laugh at something is starts a conversation.
And there can be a freedom in that.
Absolutely.
Who was your character in that?
I played the drama teacher at the school.
What was he like? What was he about?
He was so sad. He was pathetic. He really just wanted the kids to think he was a good actor. So he was also always performing. He was writing himself into the plays. He was only doing original musicals about like school shooting or about school suicides that were horribly wrong. Oh. He wrote one play where he basically just makes Pauline Fleming, who is the guidance counselor, and she's also in the movie. Deanna Chang played her brilliantly on the TV show, but we were sort of rivals. And so I did one of my plays about how it was called She Could Have Stopped It. And it was all about how women could stop, she had the ability to stop their own sexual abuse and sexual advances if they make the choices. It's just horribly wrong. It's horribly wrong. But I made everything on from the point of view of this guidance counselor who, you know, that's because I just wanted to get back at her. So it was, my character was really sad, most likely lived alone, drank a lot of wine, and... You know, and just, oh, and he did a lot of dinner theater in Florida. I kept bringing up dinner theater I did in Florida in years past.
I did a lot of dinner theater in Delaware.
See, you know, we've done it.
And he kind of reminds me a little bit, but this scene where we're filming right now, poolside, is definitely reminding me of Bright Colors, Bold Patterns.
Actually, this pool, which is in the back of my apartment, is where I shot the poster for Bright Colors and Bold Patterns. So this is actually the pool that I was in when I did the cover art where I'm drowning in the, and that's the pool noodle that we used.
And that character drank a lot as well.
He drank a lot of, yes, and did a lot of cocaine and other things. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And tell me more about that character, like how you decided to create an entire piece around this gay man who is older, who is kind of commenting and critiquing the gentrification of gayness.
For sure. I wanted to write my dream role, and I wanted to write a character that I don't feel like it's seen enough in gay material. Because I wrote the gay sidekick, the clown, the one who does drink too much, who does too many drugs, who does go there, who is the life of the party until he's the death of the party. Mm. The one that you're like, oh my God, I want that person as a friend, and oh my God, please get away from me. And the person that we've all been at times, and the person that we're afraid of being, it's all of those things. But we don't really explore that, I think, out of some level of fear or disgust or thinking like we need to show gay people as good people in some way, whatever that means. But that kind of feels like where a lot of people come from. And I wanted to just show him not as a bad person, but just as a human being. And as the guy who you think at the beginning is, oh my God, he's going to be too much. And then you're like, oh, he is too much. Oh, maybe that's a good thing. Or maybe him being too much has caused him a lot of pain, and that's why he continues to medicate in a lot of different ways. And, it also came from a fact that, like, I was seeing so many gay weddings that were popping up where they were just trying to live these really heteronormative lives, you know? And obviously I was excited and thrilled when marriage equality, you know, became a thing, and where when gay people in love were able to get married, it's an amazing thing. But I was just curious about how much queerness we were scrubbing out of our culture when we were given the opportunity. It's like immediately when you're given the opportunity to live a life that your parents lived, you're going to immediately move into the cul-de-sac and be just like Dick and Jane instead of Dick and Dick.
Well, it was interesting because I think I saw in the character, like, and he articulates this, like, so well. And I think it was, like, one of the first pieces of anything where I saw it articulated so well was this idea that, like, all of our lives we've been put in this, like, alternative box by society, mm-hmm. told to be happy there. Once we figured out how to be happy there and thrive in that box, we're now put into the big box everybody else. And if you're still kind of... And then you kind of have this shock of,
right.
Well, who am I?
And what is my personality outside of being a gay guy? And if people don't care that I'm gay, if I'm around all a bunch of gay people or a bunch of straight people who don't care, what am I outside of that? And what do I need to be? And I also think it's like about sort of teaching and learning from the next generation, you know? It's like we have a lot to learn from them, and we have a lot to share with them and teach them, and sort of taking care of each other. I'm always really interested in the multi-generational, mm-hmm. you know, aspect of our community, where you kind of have to find your family and you find, you know, your queer aunts and uncles, you know, and again, you find the kids that you can sort of help out. I mean, I think that's an interesting... an important part of our culture.
Well, there's so much, like, so many people are talking about, like, especially with the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, like, the importance of understanding our LGBTQ history and, like, honoring our LGBTQ history. But then I'm like, you're, like, a 25-year-old influencer on social media. You're saying this at the gay bar. Would you, like, really initiate a conversation with somebody older?
Exactly.
Would you really ask?
I know.
And the answer is probably no.
No,
and so I get kind of, like, annoyed when I see this very kind of trending moment of honoring our history and all these things. And it's like, how many older gay friends do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
they don't have to be a friend. It could just be like a conversation that you're having with somebody at the bar. But
absolutely.
I think a lot of these people that are saying this aren't actually, like, walking the walk and, like, engaging with people who are older, asking questions, meeting new people. But it's also hard because it does then go into, like, well, where is the appropriate setting for that?
Yeah.
A lot of times we automatically assume there's, like, a sexual desire, or it's like they're going to think I'm looking for a daddy. Maybe I am looking for a daddy or whatever.
Right,
and it's
right.
So I would love to, like, work with a community center that's, like, creating intergenerational mentorships
mm-hmm.
that are not on an app or not in a bar and
right.
are, like, kind of people coming to them being
the LGBT centers are great in the major cities for things exactly like that, for community events Also, the film festivals are a great place to meet all different types of, not just gay men, but LGBT people and queer people and everything, where you know, and it is around the world of film and entertainment and all that, but you really, there are people in the community who I see every July, and I only see them usually once a year, who, you know, we sit together and watch movies and drink vodka together, and you do learn a lot.
Oh my God!
Not only in the films, but just in the lobby and in the after, and there isn't there can be the extra vibe of like, is there some sort of sexual thing going on there? But it's not usually that, and it is more in a forum of connecting and remembering and learning, because it's like I don't know. I think it's really important for us to be curious forever, mm-hmm. and to kind of go, hey, what are you about? Where do you come from? What's the thing? Because there are so many stories and so many that we lost. I mean, there was a whole chunk of time that we lost so many artists and we lost so much of it. It was almost like it was this erasure. And then a lot of people who were, living in fear and afraid of, coming out and telling their stories, that are sort of slowly creeping out and doing this. And we have a lot of kids that don't understand that at all. And our job is not to roll our eyes at them and say, these kids, they don't know anything. It's just about to
sort of... How are they going to know about it if you don't tell them?
Show it to them, Yeah.
So. Yeah, the moral is, younger people talk to older queer people.
That's right.
What's next for you?
I'm doing a new solo show. I'm doing a 2-night workshop in LA and a 1-night in New York for World Pride at the end of June. June 11th and 12th in LA at the Dynasty Typewriter. June 29th at the Soho Playhouse in New York. It's called Happy Birthday, Doug. And it's the sort of the flip of Bright Colors in terms of, whereas in Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, my last solo show, I was one character talking to multiple people. In this show, I'm going to be multiple characters talking to one person. So I'm talking to this guy, Doug, at his birthday party. And it's set at a wine bar in Silver Lake. And it's, it's less about me showing off a million different characters as much as sort of exploring what is similar about all of us. It's a lot about how these men are all different and different walks of life and ages and shapes. And they all sort of represent parts of me and things in myself that I don't love or things that I do love. And, and it's also just their amalgamations of people that I know. And so we'll see how it goes. I'm in a state right now that I'm just in pure terror, but like, that's what it's like to be creative, I guess, just to go, I don't know what this one is.
It is Pride Month. So where does your pride come from?
That's a great question. I guess it really comes from the fact that it gets more and more, casual and accepted and quote unquote normal, which is a word I hate, but commonplace to just be gay and to be out and to be who you are. Pride comes on top of that. Like, I'm just in terms of like owning your perspective and your history and being able to be, we're saying, the specific person on top of being gay, but not having to fight for the right to just exist, And that is because we're standing on the shoulders of so many people who did. So I'm proud of the people who came before us, that it was a constant struggle, a constant fight, and so here we are, and yay.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Fame Report. If you liked what you heard, subscribe on iTunes and rate 5 stars today.